Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, Aaron O'Brien. With me is David Duncan.
What? How did I get here?
What are you doing in my room? And we have our once every 3 weeks guest, Guy Davis.
Hello.
What's up, Guy? Guy Davis was recently on us for with me alone.
He was on top of you?
Yeah.
What were you doing to him, Guy?
We don't talk about this. First rule of Flight Club.
Just like Flight Club, exactly.
Flight Club, huh?
Flight Club.
That's what pilots do. That's what they call it, the Mile High Club.
Yeah, he talked to about the episode Family. So we are.
Oh, you're making a family together. That's great, guys.
I know. We are. It's adoptive. Anyways, we are still doing our Picardy Breeze look back on the Picard series. We are looking at mostly important episodes surrounding Picard.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this episode, we are talking about Chain of Command, Part 1 and 2. Guy, when we talked about family, you cited this these two episodes that you had a little bit of a beef with, and we can get into that as we go forward.
Yes.
Just so everyone knows, just a couple things out of the way. You can find us at Synthaholics.com if you're wondering where to find us. You can also join us at Facebook/ groups and Synthaholics. And you can join the group and talk to us there, right?
Yeah, you can do that. We're growing organically lately. It's been kind of nice seeing more people chime in the group. So please go ahead and do that.
Very nice. You can also, we post on all our episodes on YouTube. So YouTube / Synthaholics. YouTube, we are, you can tweet us at Synthaholic Duo. And then also, if you have want to contribute to our podcast, you can go to Patreon/ Synthaholics, and you can throw us a little money our way.
We do not have a Synthaholics subreddit, but if anyone is so inclined to start a Synthaholics subreddit, that would be fantastic.
Absolutely.
We're not allowed to do that because we're the creators.
Yeah, they're just, they shit on us.
So, Guy, you should go ahead and make a Synthaholics subreddit.
I don't know who these people are, right, but I like listening to them. And Guy, let everyone know where to find you just at the top of the show here.
Okay, you can find me at RockyMountainGeekTank.com. You can find me on Facebook and, well, I guess we don't really do Twitter that much anymore, but you can also find, we can find us on Instagram, though. We've gotten pretty good with that.
Well, you put lewd photos on Instagram.
Is Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, so.
Yeah, nude guy photos on Instagram.
Yeah. Now that we've given everybody permission to post to Instagram, that has helped a whole lot.
Nice.
It didn't have to like pipe through one person.
Yeah, that can be difficult. And tell them when you were on Family, you talked about Witches of Flame, and I know that's your newest project. Tell them where to find all your. So you have the USS Tamberlin, which is a Star Trek based comic, web comic that you can go check out online. Tell them where you can find that as well.
And you can find all of that at gsdavisart.com.
Excellent.
And I'm actually branded, so you can find that everywhere, Twitter and Instagram and even DeviantArt. Yeah.
I knew that joke was coming.
There you go.
Yeah, definitely check out Guy's work. Guy is an amazing artist. He's done a lot of great work. I love the USS Tamberlin and Witches of Flame, which is his new comic he's developing right now. It looks absolutely fabulous. And I can't wait till you start releasing material for that guy.
I'm gonna get there.
I know. It's a slow uphill. It's like rolling that stone up the hill. That's how it goes.
It is.
It'll roll back down.
I know. If you let go for a second, you go back down a couple feet.
So, I didn't see much Star Trek news this week, but Star Trek is appearing at New York City Comic Con. So, they're having people from Picard and Discovery there. So, if any of you faithful listeners are out there...
Faithful listeners.
Let us know how that was if you go to any of those panels where Star Trek Discovery or Star Trek Picard is going. Let us know. Email us, message us in the Facebook group, however you want to let us know. I wish I could be there, but I cannot, alas. But
we're chained to our work.
But yeah, let us know if any of you guys go there. That's pretty interesting. And this is not Star Trek news, but I found it's very interesting. Apparently Battlestar Galacticus is being
rebooted. That would actually be cool. Galactus flying with a fleet.
Cylons, fuck you!
Fuck you. Adama, you can go
for it. Cylons for lunch. It wouldn't be much of a show if he was on the Adama side.
I know, he would, yeah.
But it's interesting. I wonder if they're going to go the same route as Ronald D. Moore's Battlestar Galactica, or if he's going to find a new way to spin it. Everyone's a woman. No men on the show at all. It's a lesbian show. Everyone.
I'd go for that.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Guy, anything to say about that?
Slash girl power.
Nah. You mean about Battlestar Galactica being rebooted?
Or lesbians.
Or about them all being lesbians.
Whatever. I don't care. What's your take? Hot take.
So, my thought is, I love Ron Moore's Battlestar Galactica so much. I mean, I love the original Battlestar Galactica, too. They're just different,
very different, you know? Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's kind of one of those, I feel kind of like, do we have to reboot it?
Yeah, what's the point of that?
Actually, honestly, Guy, I'm super excited about them rebooting it, because I loved Ron Moore's Battlestar Galactica, except the last two seasons kind of fell apart for me. It felt like they forgot they were doing a story arc and they started doing a bunch of random episodes. And then it's like, oh, wait, the series is over. Let's wrap it all up. And it didn't feel satisfying. It felt like Discovery's ending. It just was like, it felt rushed. It didn't.
Or,
it didn't build
Enterprise's
organically.
Ending.
Like, yeah.
Which,
Enterprise. It didn't feel like it ended organically. It's like they did a bunch of random stuff for two seasons and didn't build to an ending. And then it's like, oh, crap, we have to end it. So. Here it is.
I guess we're done now.
Yeah. And
like
so,
Babylon 5. Babylon 5 did that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a good one. If anything needs a good reboot.
Babylon 5, yes. I would be all for that.
There's some cool stuff going on in Babylon 5. I didn't watch it faithfully, so there's a lot. I have gaps of my Babylon 5 knowledge, but when I would follow it when it was on air, it was very interesting.
It is surprising parallels to Deep Space Nine, let me tell you. It is like...
When it first came out, I was a little confused. Like, did they just rip this off of Deep Space Nine, or did Deep Space Nine rip this off of Babylon 5?
They were running concurrently. I don't know how they did. Like, they must have had, people sleeping with each other, working on the same each show.
Yeah.
So all the secrets were leaked between them, because there's some weird...
And then Walter Koenig
as one of the Psychors.
Yeah.
But I mean, if this guy does Battlestar Galactica and remembers he's doing a serialized story, a serialized. my Siri is trying to talk to me. Sorry.
Shut up, Siri.
If they remember they're doing a serialized story for all four seasons, I'll be down for a Battlestar Galactica reboot because I loved it in theory, but it just kind of fell off the rails for me the last two seasons. So if it stays consistent over four seasons, I would be down for a new Battlestar Galactica.
They could do it a little better. I mean, I think at the time people were very excited for Battlestar Galactica because there was not as much out there at the moment. I don't, maybe that's wrong. I mean, did Voyager just end right around there?
Well, the thing is, Ron Moore got kicked out of Voyager because no one was able to listen to his ideas. Like, basically, if anyone listened to him, the uppers in the studio were you're going to be fired if you listen to anything Ron Moore says. So Ron Moore left and was like, I'm going to do Voyager, and I'm going to do it better.
Yeah.
But with a Mormon twist.
A Mormon twist, yeah.
Well, Battlestar Galactica was invented by a Mormon.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so, exactly.
Is Ron Moore a Mormon? Does anyone know?
I don't know.
Guy, do you know if Ron Moore is a Mormon?
I actually don't know.
Ron Mormon! Oh, that makes so much sense.
Ron Mormon.
Ron Mormon?
He's more than a man.
Did you really say that? can't even type in Ron Moore into Memory Alpha because of that now. Because I typed in Ron Mormon. So
he's a devout Moore man.
The Moore man. Because he wants more wives.
Yeah, maybe he's just gay and he just wants more men. No. You know, you can't blame the guy.
Do they do more men play?
Hey, we don't judge.
Yeah, right? if that's what you want, have at it, Ron. All right. Well, that's interesting. I guess we'll have to see more as time goes on. Let's get into our episodes here. We have Chain of Command Part 1 and 2. This is Season 6, and we're talking about Episode 10 and 11, and they first aired December 14th and the 21st in 1992. We start off, guys. We see the Enterprise with an Excelsior class. Is that the Cairo? Is that the Cairo I see? I think it was the Cairo.
That's a good question. Yes, it is.
It's the Cairo. Yeah.
Why is a brand new ship flying with a 100-year-old ship?
You know, it's funny, though. Guy, you could answer this better. Constellation class, and those were pretty old ships even when we saw them in TOS, right?
You mean the Constitution?
I'm Constitution. I'm sorry.
It was 12 years old, at least.
Yeah, the Constitution class was pretty old. I mean, and Discovery is changing that, of course, as well.
Because, right.
Of course, now putting it back another 10 years.
Right.
But it's
Constitution
like,
class.
I just think it's funny. Stamets is all like jizzing all over the fact the Enterprise has got all these great, great specs. And I'm like, Discovery's brand new.
Yeah.
The Enterprise is 10 years old at this point, or for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, but
it's several years old.
Discovery has a different layout. I mean, and I've got a buddy who's actually in the Navy, and I can see this
in the Navy.
In the Navy. But you know, we talk all the time. You know, he's stationed aboard a ship, and it's not an aircraft carrier. So, you know, every time his ship is up against one of these super carriers, they all do the same thing. They're all like, ooh, ah, because the super carriers are insane.
It's sort of like Jellicoe, you know, when he gets aboard the Enterprise.
Right.
Except for that Discovery is way longer than the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily size. It's what it does. I mean, you know, it's like...
It's not how big it is. It's how you use it.
Right, exactly. It's not how you wiggle your starship. It's...
or spin it, as in the case of Discovery.
Yeah,
goes.
Discovery spins it, yeah. Well, we get the Admiral comes aboard the Enterprise.
Like a cowgirl.
And basically says, Picard, I don't have time for tea. You're out. Jellicoe's in. And they decide to put Picard is going to relieve him of command of the Enterprise, and he will be taking over special ops mission. Next we get the Admiral's talking to Riker, Data, Troy, and they're just basically saying that the Cardassians are mobilizing their troops and their ships, and it looks like there might be some sort of invasion of some sort or some kind of military action, and they want to stop that, and so they're going, the Admiral's putting Captain Edward Jellicoe in command of the Enterprise, and Captain Picard and Crusher and Worf are re-signed on another mission, and they don't have any more information for that, and you can sort of see on their faces, they're like, what? Huh?
Yeah.
So...
are we doing again?
So this is also like, isn't this the first time we see Nechayev?
Is it the first time?
I don't know. I feel like we see her a lot in Next Gen, but maybe
but this
not.
Might
we
be do. The first
we
time.
See, we see her a lot in Next Gen, and we see her in DS9, but I feel like this is the first time we actually see Nechayev.
Yeah.
It might be. I honestly can't remember.
It's like her first...
It's her first appearance.
Yeah, it's like her first appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember here. It's like this episode also marks the first appearance of Admiral Nechayev. She would go on to appear in 3 more episodes of Next Gen, as well as 2 episodes of DS9.
I swear she shows up more. It's like the Mandela effect. I feel like she's in a lot more episodes than that.
It's because she's in 5 episodes, where, I mean, as opposed to you know, as opposed to all the other admirals where you're like, this is Admiral Bob. Next episode, this is Admiral Jim.
General
the next
Bob.
Episode, this is Admiral Poop,
there should
Tom.
Be, there should be an Admiral like, Bob.
Yeah, it's like they just keep adding admirals randomly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Nechayev actually shows up in 5 whole episodes.
Right.
Wow. Also, I'm looking here. I'm looking through some of the trivia on this. She's not wearing a comm badge for the first half of the time that she's on the Enterprise.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's an interesting side note.
She doesn't
Next time
need
you
one.
Watch this episode, everybody should look to see and note that Nechayev is not wearing a comm badge for the first half of the episode.
I missed that.
Yeah, it's a weird continuity glitch.
That is weird. So basically, Captain Jellicoe was part of some peace treaty with the Cardassians, and that she, the Admiral Chayef, feels that he is qualified to do these kind of talks between the Cardassians. And so she wanted basically someone to be aboard the Enterprise that can do that. So,
who's the biggest asshole captain we've got?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Who's not an admiral yet?
We'll get Ronnie Cox to do this. It'll be great.
I know. It'll be awesome. And then we'll put him in RoboCop. Or he was already in that by that time. Yeah, it's it passed. He had already done RoboCop. Okay, so then we get Picard, Worf, and Crusher are training on the holodeck, and they're trying to improve their time, and they have these, like, shield emitters, and they're just trying to improve their time for what they're doing. So you can see that they're... all too old for doing this mission.
Too old to begin the training.
I'm just saying.
Right.
Where's Yoda? Too old to begin the training.
You are too old.
Too old you are. Too old.
That's great.
Next we get Riker meets Captain Jellicoe in the transporter room. He has a very... Jellicoe is very... by the book, I suppose, and very in just like not much for pleasantries, gives him a bunch of orders and then says, where's my room? He tells him, he goes, oh yeah, deck 7, and then he just leaves. So we get like, this is not going to be the same relationship that he had with Picard, and Riker already feels like his life is a little coming undone.
Jellicoe doesn't like my trombone.
The rusty trombone. Anyways. And then there's a ceremony for the change of command of the Enterprise on 10 forward. And Riker makes some comment to Geordi's that they usually don't go through the ceremony unless this is like a real thing. So this looks like this is it.
So, audience, this Picard is no longer going to be the captain. Cox. You're stuck with this asshole.
Right.
You're stuck with him forever.
So it looks like this is a real thing. And also we have a meeting, or not a meeting, but a quick meeting between, Picard, Jellicoe, and Riker, how he wanted to, change the shifts to a 4 shift. And he said, we haven't got that, department heads can't make the adjustment yet. And it's going to change.
This is going to crew of 1,000 people. Is this an Enterprise crew issue, or is this a CBS staffing crew issue?
I think it's more of just like people have become like very comfortable what they're doing,
or
and then
letting Data run 2 shifts by himself, basically, probably is what
well,
it
I think
turns
that's totally what
to.
The whole point of that was to say, you know, I'm going to tighten this ship up.
Yeah. You know? Right.
Data, you can go take naps now. Yeah. I know that hasn't happened yet, but you're going to start taking naps soon. I just got a feeling.
There was a meme that went around, not a meme, but a little video somebody had made, which said, you know, if there was 1,000 people on the Enterprise, does anybody have any idea how big the ship is?
And
like, you can stuff all 1,000 of the crew of the Enterprise on like one panel on the dish. On the saucer section?
It was impressive, like, how big. I didn't realize it was that big. I mean, it was a big ship, but I felt like 1,000 people would take up more room than that.
Oh.
It was a good video.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up.
EC
like
Henry.
Nobody on board. I mean, if you're wandering the halls of the Enterprise, you'd never run into other people, really. You know?
But, I mean, like, so it's kind of cool that they did a good job. The guy explained that they did a good job of showing the actual number of people on the ship, because you wouldn't see that many people, because sometimes there's that sense of aloneness on the Enterprise. And
sure.
It's that big that you could feel alone.
Interesting.
Which is mind-blowing.
Well, from there we get a a quick exchange during the change of command ceremony that Troy sees Dr. Crusher, and she's like, I talk about it, but I can't talk about it. So they're all, it's really cool because what I liked about this part was that you have the, that the crew is upset and there is something happening behind the scenes, but they're just not allowed to know. And, I think we've all been in a position similar to that if from work or if you are in military or anything, there's just certain things you're just not allowed to know. And I think that was, well written. In my opinion. And from there we get Jellicoe wants to fire a Class 5 probe to give Picard some more information about his the caves that he's running through. So we get that exchange between Riker and Jellicoe that he wants that duty roster to be changed up. So,
get the duty roster changed up. Worf's duty is getting too many places.
That's right. Too much prune juice.
And gawk.
And gawk. We get there from Jellicoe is obviously making lots of changes, especially on the bridge. And he talks so quickly, too.
I wonder if Worf has a gawk snack meal like underneath the console he's working on. He's like
like
slurps it down.
And put in a little like Ziploc bag. And then next, Jellicoe's making a lot of changes on the Enterprise, and he wants Geordi to overhaul the warp coils, and he thinks he can improve the Enterprise's performance. And this is like Geordi's like, yeah, we can do all this, but it's going to upset like everything. And Jellicoe doesn't give a shit.
More inefficient this crew runs, the better it is for me.
Yeah, that's right. More business.
That's just what he always says. He always says, get it done.
The more bullshit I can bullshit through.
The more shit I give you, the worse it'll be. So anyways, also Jellicoe tells Riker to get the fish out of the ready room.
I thought it was...
Yeah, there's an interesting story behind that, of course.
Jellicoe and their fish?
He's definitely afraid of fish.
Well, no, the fish in general, because actually Patrick Stewart hated the fish.
I hate this fish, number one. That's why I keep it.
Well, no.
I want a dog that breathes underwater.
That's why this fish tried to kill me on SETI Alpha 5.
Because Patrick Stewart is an animal lover. And, of course, one of the things he said was that in an enlightened society, they wouldn't be capturing animals and sticking them in the brig.
In the fish brig.
Put the cats in the brig.
But then I was like, it's not the bridge, it's a briefing.
The cats in the brig of the silver spoon, little boy blue and a man in the Pluto.
And he had a valid point. And so actually he had been kind of grumping about this for a while. And so it was very interesting because this was a sort of a bone that they were throwing to Patrick Stewart.
That's hilarious.
Here. Yeah, it was kind of like, hey, look, we got rid of the fish for one episode.
He's also, Jellicoe's redecorating his ready room with children's drawings.
Yep.
So for the hard ass that he is, he's got like this kid's drawing little crayon drawings of elephants and stuff like that.
He's probably gay too because he tells Troy to put clothes on for some reason.
So Troy meets with him and says, you know,
the crew hates you.
The crew's very
upset.
But
look at these. Maybe you'll feel better. He's like, put those away.
Put those away. Your powers won't work on me, woman.
You're not a Bene Gesserit.
There's a whole lot of things that happen that Jellicoe did that are like, I'm such a jerk. There really is like bones thrown to the cast.
Yeah.
Because really, Marina hated her little booby uniform.
Booby uniform, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm more than just a pair of boobs.
She was really happy to go to a normal uniform. And this was another bone that they threw to her.
And then she does go almost all Jellicoe's fault. And she goes in for the regular uniform after that, right?
Yeah, she stays in her regular uniform for the remainder of the series.
Interesting.
Because Marina didn't like those goofy cat suits she was wearing. She wanted to be dressed like everybody else in the show. And so it took 6 seasons for
right, yeah, yeah. Took a while to do that. So she basically says, yeah, the crew's upset. And he's like, I want you to work on morale and change your uniform. So
That's not going to help my morale. I'm sorry.
Right. So, and then we have a quick exchange between Riker and Geordi. Basically, Geordi's like, I can't get anything done. This is the too much that he's asking to do, and I have no time to get it done. And
Every time I start one thing, he asks me to start another.
And said, I'll talk to Picard. And then we have a scene where Picard is coming back from his exhaustive training, and he's just trying to put his feet up the coffee table, and Riker walks in and sees them all, like, sweaty and exhausted. He goes,
I'll come back later.
I'll come back when you're more ready to talk. So, and I don't think they get a chance to talk.
He hands him a flute and just backs out slowly.
Here's your flute. Walks away. Want to jam later with my trombone?
Mm. Anyways. The skin trombone.
Oh, Jesus. Then we get a meeting between Picard and Jellicoe in the ready room, and they talk about Picard's mission. And Jellicoe says that he just doesn't like how he runs the ship. And he doesn't like Riker either, so... It's kind of sucky. You know, he's just kind of being a dick. You know, it's like, this mission might be your last thing you ever, you know, ever do.
I don't like you either.
So, anyways.
There's some really good ones. It's like, I just wanted you to know that you suck as a first officer. Well, while we're speaking, frankly, I just want you to know you suck as a captain.
I know. They're so bad with each other. From there we go. Picard, Worf, and Dr. Crusher on the shuttlecraft, and then he tells them what their mission is. So there's these rumors that the Cardassians on Celtris 3 are on this trying to develop a metagenic weapon. And a metagenic weapon basically... You know, you fire it into a planet's atmosphere, and it destroys all organic life, leaving behind only the infrastructure that was on that planet. So
it's a fart weapon. It kills people by smell. They die from the olfactory glands exploding in their brain.
Oh, God, it's so bad.
The Cardassians are, of course, immune to it because they don't have any olfactory...
They have that little diamond thing on their head.
Yeah, it filters out the bad smells. It's a spoon.
No, it's a... What is it? It's like a air freshener on the top of their head. They walk around.
A spoonful of cocaine helps the medicine go down.
Cocaine, did you say?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's what Dave's on right now. Guy, if you just want to know.
I'm able to say, starting to worry here.
Yeah, he's took a spoonful of cocaine just before we started. Joking, people.
Down.
I'm joking, people. Anyway, so their mission
thank you for clarifying.
Is to their mission is to find this metagenic weapon or this research facility, and apparently there's a way that they can find it through Theta Band, which is something that he studied on the Stargazer, so he kind of knows why they chose him. Worf is there for his his security head, and he likes blue barrels thrown on top of him. And Dr. Crusher is there to locate and destroy any biotoxins.
Well, they're pretty sure none of the Cardassians are related to the blue barrel, so you won't have to sue.
Just roll over them. It'd be funny if you shoot out of nowhere and someone threw it at him.
Yeah.
So from there,
see Worf have a panic attack every time he walks into one of the storage bays. He's like, starts breathing out.
He has to talk to Troy about it. That's why the Troy and him got in a relationship.
Yeah, probably.
They go into, they're trying to get into the Cardassian territory, but they need help, and they, go to this, planet, really poorly laid out bar. And they find a Ferengi that might give them passage into the Cardassian territory.
And apparently Beverly Crusher is well-versed in the secret love of Umax.
Umax.
She goes to the holodeck and practices on Ferengi because that's how she gets a freak on in her free time.
Is that how she does it? I thought she likes ghosts.
Well, ghost Ferengis.
I need to wash my brain out now on that.
Dave says, Dr. Crusher uses her female wiles to get the Ferengi to give them passage to this research facility so they can stow away there or hide away there. From there, they get, so they are going to, get the Cardassians over and start talking, peace talks. So see what they're up to. And Jellicoe has the Cardassian beam over and he has them just wait for an hour. And by the time he gets there, obviously the Cardassians, upset. And, this is obviously Jellicoe's just trying to play him and get him upset.
Right. Jellicoe doesn't know how to not get people upset.
Yeah, I think that's Jellicoe's mission in life.
Just to piss people
off. Can I upset people? Yeah, let's upset people.
Yeah, I know. It's like it was either that or work at the DMV, so
Space DMV.
Your freighter
worse than space DMV.
Your freighter registration will cost you 3 million credits. What? So from there we have Picard and Crusher and Worf. They're running through the tunnels at Celtris 3, and they're trying to find these Theta bands and track down this research facility. And so there they are. They come to this like huge giant canyon that they have to just climb down. So Worf asks Crusher if she's afraid of heights, and she's like, "No, I'm not afraid of heights."
I am.
Why would you ask that?
Why would you ask such a terrible question like that, Worf? You monster.
Pushes her off. Now you're scared.
Hand palm her off?
Yeah.
Because that's a Star Trek move.
Yeah.
I never understood. When Jellicoe comes back after making the Cardassian commander, Lemek, wait for an hour, he's just so super pissed off, and the talk doesn't go anywhere. And then when they storm out, then Jellicoe gives him instructions like, "Look, Jellicoe's we're trying to work with him. He's just a loose cannon," and trying to give him like the crazy commander kind of thing, like, "You just don't know what you're dealing with here." And
it's not really a lie.
He's a little crazy, and says, "You know, bring bring some of his guys aboard to make things better for you know, between them."
Just tell the Cardassians exactly how you feel about me.
Right. Exactly. And so they're playing the Cardassians, obviously, during this point. Back on the Celtris 3, Picard and his. Excursion group are they have to shoot their phasers through lava tubes to get through, and to get to this place. So obviously it's
the Horta's been here.
I know, they should have thrown the Horta in there. No kill eye.
Lava tubes. No, where's the shag carpet?
One of those things that's where you're like, okay, so. We presume that somewhere along the line, we bring the Horta into the Federation, right?
Right.
So why do we not just, like, have Horta in a bottle right here, right?
Yeah, they should.
Just, like, beam the Horta down and say, "Hey, Horta, your coordinates are..." And the Horta's like, "Yes, sir." And then, blah, 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 blah.
Totally. Thank you, guy.
It's the best secret agent thing. It just burrows through rock. Cardassians can't follow it. It just burns Cardassians up by rolling over it.
What are we going to do? We're totally just going to sit there and say, we're going to send this starship captain, his doctor, and, hey, okay, one guy who's, like, qualified for this.
Somewhat.
But these are the three people we're going to send into the tunnels.
Right, yeah.
Let's send Mo, Curly, and Larry. The Celtris right.
And I'm sitting there going,
"White guy,
you could have sent a Black Ops team."
Yeah, I know.
No,
I know.
No, I know.
Where's Section 31?
Ship's primary captain.
Yeah, where is Section 31?
Section 31. Where are you?
Oh, it hasn't been invented yet. Right, right.
Section 31.
Ash Tyler.
Good one, guy. Very good. So from there, we jump back in the Enterprise, and Jellicoe meets with the Cardassians now, and they talk about that the Cardassians are massing troops and staging areas and assembling a strike force, and they want to send a few of Federation starships into their
cut off the arms and they grow right back.
Why did you throw starfishes at us? Starships into the...
They're also good pasties.
So he wants to send the starships into the sector, the Kardashians are not going for that, obviously.
Damn Kim Kardashian!
Anyway, so the negotiations don't go very well, and the Cardassian seems to know that there might be a Picard. Well, they don't say Picard, but a force going onto one of their planets. So, yes, they seem to be well aware of what's happening.
It's almost like they were laying a trap just to get Patrick Stewart naked. Wait.
Maybe.
We haven't gotten to that part yet.
We haven't got to that part, but yeah.
This is an elaborate trap for naked pics.
And then we get on Seltzer's 3, Beverly Crusher gets covered in rocks, and Worf pulls her out.
Covered me in rocks, baby.
And then Worf pulls her out while Picard just leans against the rock wall, waiting for Worf to do his thing.
Waiting for the inevitable.
And then from there they find the research center, like a maintenance hatch, and when they go in there, Worf opens the door, and then they find out that this is a trap, and they are going to be attacked by...
It's a trap!
It's a trap! The Cardassians are attacked...
Yes, where's that black part?
It'd be great if he just popped out of nowhere. Cardassians attack Picard and Worf and Crusher, and Worf shot, and Picard still stays behind fighting, and he's captured too as well, while Worf and Crusher run away. They bravely ran away.
Bravely ran away, away. When danger reared its ugly head, they bravely turned the tail and fled. Brave Sir Worf, chicken.
Anyways, Riker tells Jellicoe that they've got some... news from Seltzer's 3 that they did get the Theta Band emissions a few minutes ago, and they are going to tell. He tells Admiral Nechev, thank you. That there is a that they found that, but they don't know anything about Picard.
The bitch face.
You're terrible. And then, from there we get, Picard is led into his, torture room, and, he gets to meet, Gull, Madred?
Gull Madred.
And Picard is revealed that, because he was captain of the Stargazer and of his experience with Theta, Theta Ban, signals that he would know, he would be one of the guys they would choose, and they want to basically use to mine his information. So, and this is where we get the be continued. So, next episode, we jump to Picard being drugged and being questioned, and he's.
My brother was an asshole. He has one son. His wife is hot, and I wrestled him for money.
And so we get all that.
I know nothing about the end radiation.
And so we basically see that Picard is being pumped for questions or for information. So that's what's happening.
Milking him.
And then we jump over to the Enterprise with Jellicoe, Riker, Troy, and Gull, Lamech, and they are still talking about their peace agreement or, you know, stand down or whatever you want to talk about. They're just trying to talk. I don't know if peace is the way that they're talking about, but they're basically trying to broker some kind of agreement between each other. And then that's when Lamech says that Captain Picard has been captured in Cardassian territory, and that he killed 55 men and women and children. And when they ask for proof, Lamech says that Picard is being held prisoner, and they kind of like walk out from there. So they say, let's have a brief recess. And so that's where Jellicoe is like, you know, Riker wants to go and get him. Jellicoe's like, no.
He's probably dead. Let's just leave him be.
Yep. He's likely dead, so we're just going to leave him where he is.
Because
we never go back for our dead.
That's right. And then
we leave them buried under rocks so the birds can get at them.
Then we have this interesting exchange between Madred and Picard, and they are talking about the ruins of Cardassian Prime and how they were talking about everything that, like, in the past. So we kind of get, like, a brief history about the Cardassians, like, for a second.
History of Cardassia.
And he kind of he appeals to Picard's...
intellectual side.
Well, his archaeological interest in ancient civilizations.
His love of fossils.
Well, ancient ruins. Yes. And old pottery, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, from there, they go into... they want to know his Picard's information that he might know for the Federation's defense plans for Minos Corva. And Picard's like, I don't know any about this. You drugged me for that. I told you I don't know any of that. And he doesn't believe you. Doesn't believe them. And that's where we basically see that this is not going to be a pleasant experience for Picard.
He takes his clothes and ties them up with his hands above his head.
Right, exactly. And we basically get Picard naked. And he's pretty naked.
He is very naked.
He actually is totally naked. Apparently, Patrick Stewart wanted to be authentic about this. And so they closed the set. And that's him in the hymn. That's him. That's the whole Picard.
David Warner gets an eyeful. The show.
Yes, exactly.
Well, now David Warner and Patrick Stewart go back quite a ways.
Do they?
So they're actually old friends from a long time ago.
He's like, Patrick, I never thought I'd see your schwanz.
Well,
not unless we filmed it for days.
If you've ever been on stage with anybody else, if you've ever done stage acting, you start to kind of lose your inhibitions on those things, because that just happens with set changes,
yeah,
and clothes changes and stuff like that. It just occurs. So I can kind of see that being they're just there. We're good.
Interesting. So. I've never been on stage really, so I wouldn't know about that. Anyways, from there we go to, an Enterprise in the sick bay. We have, they're going over the Crusher and Worf's tricorder readings, and they're going to see if they can figure out some kind of rescue mission for Picard. And like I said, Jellicoe thinks that's just a waste of time. So we know that we're not going to get help from Jellicoe or the Enterprise crew right now. From there, we're back on wherever they are, if they're still on the same planet. And Madred basically brings Picard off his being hung up and strung up on that torture device. And he's like, oh, I hope you slept well. And he can't even put his arms down because he's been hanging.
Literally hanging for the entire time.
Yeah. And again, he's still naked. So, you know, just very uncomfortable. And this is where we get Picard. He asks Picard how many lights he sees, and he gives him a little taste of his pain applicator.
In pain sticks, but it's internalized.
Yeah.
For the Klingon inside you.
It reminds me of the Dune has the heart valves for the Harkonnens. So if you're insubordinate or if they don't like you, they just pull your heart valve and just bleed out and die. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's a little more final, but... He's like, and that's the lowest setting, Picard. And he wants to know how many... lights there are, and there's four lights, but he keeps on insisting that there's five. So this is the iconic moment, if you want
to call. There are four lights. There's so many memes and and gifs on all the things for there are four lights. Most people who don't know about Star Trek probably have heard there are four lights. Maybe not most, but some. I there's a good number of people that have heard that.
Back on the Enterprise, we're having the meeting with the crew with the Cardassians, and Gollumak basically says, we got Picard, and Jellicoe just says he was acting on his own accord. It had nothing to do with us, and do with him what you want. And so basically they decide that they're not going to work together between the Cardassians and the Federation, and that kind of just all falls apart. And after that meeting, Riker and Jellico have their big fight, and this is where he relieves Riker of duty. And basically, because Riker doesn't think he's looking out for Picard, at least he thinks we should go after him. And Jellico isn't going to go
for it. I feel like Jellico's in on the whole let's torture Picard thing.
Yeah, he's working with the Cardassians for that.
It's an inside job.
Jellico promotes Lieutenant Commander Data to Commander Riker's position, so he's now wearing a red uniform. And then they find out the Cardassians are probably, by doing some research, they find the Cardassians are interesting in maybe making a military move at Minos Corvo. And Enterprise is going to go over to that section. And we're going to see from there, they're going to find the Cardassian ships hiding in that nebula.
It's always the nebulous.
And so back on Seltzer's 3.
I think it's going to be funny if we like invent space travel and get out the nebulas and we have no problem scanning through them. That's going to be hilarious.
Mandred's talking with his daughter and basically saying that humans don't love their daughter or their kids or children like the Cardassians.
They're just animals. See, they hang with their schlong out. This is how they have fun.
He's not hanging at this point, but he's kind of passed out in the chair. And then they talk about this talk between each other, how Picard finds it weird that he would bring his daughter into this situation, into his work, you know. And he's like, you should see what your dad does for a living. Know what your dad does.
He tortures humans.
Human. And then we get into a whole thing between that the Cardassian military will make sure that his daughter will never go hungry. And Picard makes the comment, her belly may be full, but her spirit will be empty. And
he gets the button.
He gets smacked in the face, and then he gets the whole lights. And he's like, "How many lights are there?" And Picard's like, "What lights?
I don't see no lights."
And then
I see birdies flying around my head.
And then he puts him into the pain thing. So, then later we have Picard's laying on the floor, and he's having a dream about his family in France, and Madrid wakes him up and, you know, talks to him about, you know, this must be nice that you know, you can go to those places in your head. And he says, well, I can't get anything from you, so you're free to go. I'm going to talk. We have Dr. Crusher.
We're
going to
torture the woman. We've got these really great nipple clamps.
And then Picard decides he can't do that. So he decides that he will sit in the chair.
I'll stay.
Just let Crusher go.
Just don't hurt her.
Obviously, they don't have Crusher, but, you know.
He doesn't know that.
He doesn't know that at the moment, right, exactly. So, as I said before, Geordi finds out that the ships had some interaction with this nebula that made their hulls have some degradation. And because of that, they can only stay in this nebula for so long. So this is what they know, and that they know that this they might be planning an attack or some kind of incursion or something to that. So they're going to move. He moves his ship over to this nebula, and they're going to get ready for lay some mines down for these Cardassian ships.
Riker's playing the game Mine Layer instead of Mine Sweeper.
Yeah. Yes. So. And then we have Picard wakes up, and Medrid's having an egg, this weird egg that's alive still. And Picard eats it. Obviously, he's grossed out, but he still eats it. And then Cardassian tells Picard about how he
was a scared child.
Yeah, was a child that he didn't have any food, and this was he was starving. And how he found this
teenagers beat him up.
He found this egg, and these bigger kids beat him up. And Picard says, "I'll always see you as that 6-year-old." And then, so then he gets angry at Picard, and Picard, and he does the whole, "How many lights are there?" And you know, there's 4 lights. He says, "There's 5." So, and then he gives him more pain shocks, and he's like, "You can't hurt me.
You were just a little scared child."
Yeah, yeah. And then he starts singing in French, too.
Père Jacques,
Père Jacques, anyways, Jellicoe is out of the shuttle bay where they're getting ready for these mines, and LaForge is there, and they start talking about their time doing the Jovian run when they were in the academy. And they're talking about this. He's like, "Will you be great for this mission?" He says, "No, you really want Riker. Riker's the best pilot that there's out there." I never realized Riker was that great of a pilot. I don't think I've ever seen him other than a few times.
Yeah, he's never piloted anything up until
Riker's
now.
Also Han Solo.
Yeah.
He made the Kessel Run in 11 passes.
And then we have Jellicoe goes to Riker's quarters and kind of asks him to do this, and then they kind of say, "I don't like you, and you don't like me, but let's do this for the greater good." And Riker, says, "Yes, of course, I'll do that.
And you're welcome."
"You're welcome."
And Jellicoe storms out like an angry...
"You're welcome, bitch."
Yes.
So...
Yes. Like that.
And then they take off, and they LaForge and Riker, and they're going through the nebula, and they lay their minds. And this is where, after that, Jellicoe starts talking to Golemech and saying, "We know your fleet's there. It's hiding in the nebula," and he sets off a small mine. So that's just a warning.
That's just the teaser.
Wait for later. So
wait for the tickler.
Yes, exactly. So they decide that they're going to eject their phaser coils, and they're going to leave to go back home.
Oh, and by the way, leave us Picard.
Oh yeah, and that was the last thing, is give us back Picard. So we have probably the last scene here. Picard wakes up and sees the control device, and he's trying to smash it, but he's too weak to even do that. And Madrid's
basically... "I've got a whole drawer full of them."
He says, "I got a whole bunch of them. It doesn't matter." And anyways...
That's just the prototype model anyway. It's fine.
So he tells him that the Enterprise is burning in space and that everything's lost. And he says, "You could live out your rest of your life. In
you could
comfort,
pick up fossils.
You could do
just
whatever.
Tell me that there's five lights, and we'll just be best pals for the rest of our lives."
Right, and he's Picard thinks about it for a moment, but that's when the Cardassians come in, and I think it's Lamech comes in as well.
Yeah.
And he says, "You told him you'd all be cleaned up and clothed," and then he says, "We're taking you home." And then Picard turns around and gives that, "There are four lights."
Nice.
Yes, and then he leaves, and then Picard comes back onto the ship. Picard is reinstated as captain, and Jellicoe leaves, and he goes, "It's been a pleasure serving with all of you," and just walks away. And everyone's like, "Don't let the door hit you in the ass." And from there we get
Troy. Where are your boobs gone?
Troy goes, sits down with Picard, and he reveals that at that last moment that he actually did see five lights because he was so tempted just to stop the torture. So, and then we are out of Chain of Command Part 1 and 2. It's how it wraps. Guy, I know you wanted to talk about this, and I'm interested in your thoughts. I know we talked a little bit about it when we talked about family, but let's hear your thoughts about this episode.
So, the primary thing I think that I kind of brought it in here is the, why it's got that huge Deus Ex Machina in it that bothers me.
Yeah.
We really want to use something here. I don't know. Let's do Picard and stick him in a Captain Kirk-like role. Picard's not Captain Kirk.
Actually, Picard probably would have worked much better as negotiating with the Cardassians.
Right. Putting that as Riker and Crusher and Worf would have been a better combination. I understand that, of course, this whole thing wouldn't... There's no way... I mean, I love... Don't get me wrong. I love Jonathan Frakes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Jonathan Frakes has the chops to have pulled off Chain of Command Part 2.
No. Yeah.
No.
So
yeah.
I would have done some other switcheroo, like, okay, Picard, we'll negotiate with you, but you've got to come across the border in a shuttlecraft, just you, and then capture him and do all this to him. You know what I mean?
Right.
That would have been a much more reasonable thing. Meanwhile, Riker and Worf and Crusher are down there in the mines of Moria.
The mines of Moria.
You fools.
Right? I mean, you know, it's like,
Ian McKellen, what are you doing down here?
Oh, I'm just hanging out with my good friend Patrick Picard.
Right? I mean, it's like that's always been one of my problems, is this is one of those episodes where they've misplaced the character Picard.
Yeah.
In favor of, we've got to put more action in.
Right.
And it's like, no, you don't. This is the problem with Nemesis, the movie Nemesis, too, is the same thing. It's like, we got to put more action in, you know?
Yeah.
Which, you know, in First Contact, it makes sense.
Yeah, the ship's under siege. It's a totally different story, right? Yeah.
But Nemesis was weird, and it was like the same thing. It was like, we're going to put Picard in a dune buggy. Yeah. You're like, what?
Ron Perlman's going to tell Ed Hardy to take his medicine.
Right? It's like, it's the same thing here. It's like, We've decided that the only ship in the fleet that could possibly do this is the guy who's, I mean, you know, let's be realistic. This is season six, right? So this is 6 years from now for me, right? Mm-hmm. Because I just had my 47th birthday. So I'm the same age as Patrick Stewart was at season one.
Right.
Right. So I'm looking at this from like 6 years from now. I'm like, I really wouldn't be able to haul around the mines like that. And no military in their right mind would assign this job to me. Right?
But I mean, the medical's better. He's got a fake heart. He's good.
I know, but it's still kind of one of those things. It's like,
Yeah, no. I mean, like Dave said, where's Section 31? Like you said, where's the Horda? I mean, honestly, if they had a Horda in a Section 31 Horda, and they just like throw them down there, and the Horda just burrows down.
New comic that I'm ready formulating in my head.
Totally,
right now. Section 31 Horda.
This is great.
That's my next gen comic right there.
This is the birthplace.
I love it. I think that's wonderful.
I'm the great great grandmother of the Horta that Captain Kirk saved.
Yeah. I love that. I do agree. I think that is. I read though that this was episodes they were a little low on cash, and so they decided that they were going to do this episode two part, and they were going to make this like a one on one with Gul Madrid.
Right. I mean, like the Gul Madrid stuff is great.
Really cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap to do. Yeah, it is really great.
And I totally agree with that. I mean, it makes total sense. And it works. That part I have no problem with. It's a beautiful episode. And we show quite a bit of Patrick Stewart's ability to do some incredible, incredible heavy lifting.
Yeah.
It's
strong stuff.
This is where you see Patrick Stewart act. And yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, all of my complaints with this episode are totally on a technical pivot, just like it is with Family. You know, it's like I don't have a problem with the concept, the theory, but at least with this one, I just have one problem with that one conceit, as opposed to Family, which I feel like, you know, they could have gone further. I don't really feel like they needed to go any further with Chain of Command 1 and 2.
Right.
You're pretty much writhing in your seat watching the entire episode. Yeah, it's just hard. About as deep as it can go.
Yeah, it's hard
I'm
to
fine
watch.
With how, yeah. It really is. Now, Patrick Stewart watched Amnesty International videos to prep for this. So he watched people being tortured so that he could prep for this particular role.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, he went all out. And so that's a big like plus.
Yeah.
So you know, as much as I knock this particular episode, and I really don't mean to knock it too much, the story was written by Frank Abate Marco, but it was overwritten a little bit. It had a page one rewrite by Jerry Taylor. And she moved on to Voyager and became one of the founding members of Voyager.
Okay.
So, you know, she was a major writer in all of the last parts of this of TNG, the last half of TNG.
Okay.
She was one of the major writers in the writer's room. And so all of this stuff that's going on with Jerry, you know, Jerry Taylor rewrote all of this, and then she said, you know, the biggest thing that amazed her was how much Patrick Stewart brought to the table on this.
Mm-hmm.
Because he brought 150%.
Yeah.
Just so much into this part.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just a big deal. It's like this is a hard episode. This is like Sarek when Patrick Stewart had to
borrow Bendai syndrome.
Mimic having Bendai syndrome, and you've got that same kind of just heavy lifting or Inner Light. So this is like, you know, this is where they let Patrick Stewart be Patrick Stewart, and you realize he's definitely a Shakespearean actor. And so I really appreciate that.
There's obviously some, how should I put it? There's some really good acting, obviously, throughout Next Gen, but it's always obvious that Patrick Stewart is, you know, way above what a lot of the other actors' abilities are.
Yeah, he's a whole rank above all of these other guys.
And it's just one of those things that you don't really realize it until he, like, brings out an episode like this, and you're just like, oh, this guy isn't not like the rest of them, you know? And you totally appreciate it at first until you look back at it, so.
Right.
Well, and
you bring in David Warner. Now, first of all, David Warner was brought into this part 3 days before shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had to pinch hit because the actor they originally wanted couldn't make the shoot for whatever reason. I can't remember what the reasoning behind it was. So he's literally reading cue cards because he didn't have time to learn his lines.
Wow, that's crazy.
So he's reading cue cards over Patrick Stewart's shoulder through all of this.
Wow.
They wrote the entire script.
That's crazy.
On cue cards.
That's awful. I mean, just to be put through that, you know?
Yeah. And
he's a great actor, though.
But I was about to say, that's another one of those. Then you look at David Warner as this super powerhouse, because here he is. He's reading cue cards, and he's firing off these lines. And he's almost cold reading them, you know? And he's doing this insanely good job of making you hate Gal Madrid.
Sure. Now,
you remember David Warner, of course, was also in Star Trek VI, and he's also in Star Trek V.
The hippie wanting to find God.
I know. So, I mean, there's like all kinds of stuff. David Warner keeps coming back over and over and over.
What does God need with a hippie?
He also was dealing with the CPU in Tron. So
nice.
Yeah, it's like we've seen Warner a lot here
and
this kind of stuff. So Warner is, we know Warner's got the chops to do it, but it's still, that was a tough, you know, that's always one of my favorite parts of the story of Chain of Command 1 and 2. There's all these other things that are going on. Apparently Paramount Stage 16, there was so many stray cats that roamed around that the set was constantly covered with sand. The cats were using it as cat litter.
Oh, Jesus.
So the actors are crawling around in kitty poop during all of those.
That's terrible.
So the next time you watch those scenes, remember 16.
They're crawling through cat piss.
Just coffee, San Francisco.
It's just horrible because the cats just loved that set, it was like, oh my goodness!
Yeah, let's set up shop here, Dave, what did you think about this?
It's a really good 2-part episode. For me, the first part doesn't make a whole lot of sense once you find out that the whole thing was a weird fetish trip for Gol Madrid to just have Picard naked in front of him so he could shock him to death.
Hmm.
It was just weird. Like, all this giant setup for what?
Yeah.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, there is a certain amount of that. I agree.
I mean, it's a great two-part episode. We get to see Patrick Stewart do some amazing acting, like we said before, but it's so convoluted. They have, like, there's a weapon that Picard kind of knows about. He, like, read a book on it, like, 20 years ago, and no one else read that book. And, like, here, let's put him on a mission. And then, and somehol, Gol Madrid knew that he read the book.
Well, they knew that. But, you know, the thing was that you almost have a whole episode just to set up part two.
Yeah, and, like, Guy's, you know, idea, just, like, you know, said doing some other setup where he's got to come across on a shuttlecraft and they kidnap him. They could have done that all in one episode and it just been, like, that's all they needed to do. And they could have gotten to the torture and everything. Like, so much the setup in the first episode is just, like, it just seems like it's there to waste time so they can do the awesome part two episode.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about it, because it's super convoluted for Gol Madrid to get his hands on Patrick Stewart, for Captain Picard. For him to do that, he had to, like, know that Starfleet would, you know, take him out of command, put him in charge of a mission. Like, so many things had to go right perfectly for him to have his fun torturing Picard.
Right, right.
It doesn't make a lot of sense when you think
about it. And if you've ever made plans based off what other people might do...
It's so hard.
It never works, how you think it's going to work.
You know, when you go to someone's house, you think about seeing them, and it's like, oh, what are you going to talk about? You think about how the conversation... It never, ever goes the way you think it is.
Sure.
And that, this is like that, but like... 100,000 times more complicated.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you're expecting a military organization to fall into your hands logically.
Right, right, exactly.
I mean, like, but I mean, it's not bad. It's a fun watch. It's a great episode. It's great acting. It's all fun. But the first episode does fall apart a little bit for me in terms of like how the hell did it even work out the way you wanted it to?
Yeah, what I thought about this episode. I agree with both of your points. First of all, what I enjoyed was seeing Jellicoe take command and how much different he would run the Enterprise compared to Picard. And Picard trusts his subordinates to do the correct things.
Mm-hmm.
And he's learned to work with them and trust them, which is wonderful. And he lets them do it in their own style and fashion without, you know... I'm sure Picard has to come down hard. We've seen him come down hard on people before, too, in the past, you know, with all sorts of stuff with Data and for things that they've done. So that's interesting on that aspect. And I like the, like I said before, like when Jellicoe takes command and everyone's like, what the fuck is happening? You know, it's great to see all that. The second thing is, you know, I came to the decision after watching this, and it never occurred to me before, but the Federation just basically takes their best officers and then grinds them down to nothing. Picard has literally gone through hell and back over and over again for the Federation and for what he believes in. And, like, this guy should be in a loony bin by the end of, like, season 7.
He should be in the loony bin, and then he's going to go to Starfleet and Star Trek Picard, and it's like, I need a ship. And they're going to be like, fuck you, no.
Fuck you. Why would we do anything for you?
And then he's going to be like, well, I guess I'll look for the nearest Han Solo and use their ship.
It is literally defies logic that this guy who, you know, obviously saved the Earth from the Borg multiple times, you talk about conspiracy, saved him from the, like, the little creatures invading all the bodies. You know, it's just over and over again, he's done all these things for the Federation and for Earth. And yet, you know, he's still functioning. And, like, either Troy is one hell of a counselor, or he's on some heavy medication. I don't know. It's nuts. If you think about it, this guy should not be operating on a normal level. Like, he should be like,
right.
you know, like painting with feces or something like that. I mean, he's got to be out of his mind.
He should be hanging around that cell where Spock killed all those people in the Federation funding.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I don't know. So I feel bad for him by the end of all this. And
he's been through so much crap. And to make it all worse, I didn't mention this up top, but Doomcock put out a video where he wasn't spouting off quote-unquote facts.
Sure.
He had an actual theory video where since all Star Trek shows are always named after the ship of the space station,
sure,
he thinks they're going to kill Picard at the end of the first season of Picard, but they're going to name the ship after him. And it's a theory so stupid, I'm scared CBS is actually going to do it.
That's interesting.
I told you, I kind of like that theory.
I hate it with a passion, but
I wonder if they do it on the first during the first. But it did cross my mind, and I didn't see this video, and you never told me about this. But I did cross my mind that somewhere during the series that they would kill Picard, like he would be killed.
They're talking like he's theorizing like last episode of the first season. They named the ship after him, and then the show will continue on without him, and that's the ship. The ship is called Picard. And I'm just like, it's such a dumb theory. I wouldn't put it past CBS to be like, yeah, let's do that.
That would be hard
to
swallow.
You're not going
to
be able to keep. I mean, Patrick Stewart's as old as my dad. And frankly, my dad just got out of the hospital yesterday. Again. Because my dad has COPD like Leonard Nimoy does.
Oh.
And so my dad's in and out of the hospital all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, at 76... My dad, no. I mean, really?
But I thought that's why they're also pitching Picard as a limited run series. They're talking 3 seasons, maybe 4 max. They weren't planning on this being a long...
Yeah, that's 40 episodes. That's 40 episodes in 4 years, right? I mean, you know, and that's back to sort of the same thing. I mean, I'm the same age as Patrick Stewart was when Next Gen was rolling, and my dad's now the same age as Patrick Stewart is now.
Yes.
And I look at these two things and I'm like, you know, you're asking a lot out of Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were asking a lot out of Patrick Stewart during TNG's run. I just look at that from my point of view. I'm not ill or not, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm still relatively young and doing fine, but I'm starting to wake up with things creaking in the morning. You know, it's like,
sure,
you know, bones
sure.
don't quite like me. My back doesn't like me much anymore. I did too much martial arts when I was a kid, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
So I mean, and I can't imagine that Stewart being an actor and having spent all that time pratfalling and throwing himself around sets and things like that, he's in much better shape than I am. I mean, you know, that's pretty much the same thing as martial arts in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. And I'd be curious that I think it would be a bad idea to get him off the show within the first season, but maybe after the second season, I could see something happening.
Yeah, I could see it. I could definitely see it. And I could see some legitimacy to it. And not just this is a stupid idea, I think we'll roll it. But rather there's only so much you can ask it of somebody who's 77 years old.
Right, right.
I mean, he's pushing 80.
Yeah. No, I know.
Now, I mean, that said, I did just look up Betty White's bio. And, you know, you want to talk about terrifyingly long career.
Yeah,
Betty White started her career and then had to put it on hold for World War II.
Right.
So,
right.
There is that.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I get that. And that, and, you know, but the thing is, too, you know, for acting, especially when you're at, you know, Patrick Stewart's status, you know, they kind of cater to you.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's going to be like, you know, sitting in a shitty trailer and waiting for his, you know, for his call and stuff like that. You know, they're going to make sure that everything works around his schedule.
Waiting on him hand and foot.
Sure. Yeah. He's got a really nice trailer and stuff like that. So
yeah, for sure. So I think the thought is valid for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean, like I'm almost certain this is going to happen. Like it's such a thing that I don't think is a great idea. It's just
you hate it so much
that I'm sure
that
it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yeah,
that usually how it goes. I don't know. I'm really...
If it doesn't happen, I will kind of be shocked.
Well, now, and maybe this is because I come from my anime background where, you know, that's totally a thing that would happen in anime. You know, the captain would die and they would rename the ship honorably as after the captain, and everybody would stand there in stoic silence.
Captain
and,
Global you know, dies.
Yeah, Captain Global dies. And so they call this the USS Global. And I mean, come on. I mean, that happens in anime all the time. So maybe as an anime fan, I'm a little bit more like, oh, that sounds kind of cool, you right. know, in its own way.
Yeah, and I was thinking back, too, because, you know, we're talking about these look-backs on Picard, and one of them I was thinking of.
Doing this for no reason. They're just going to kill him off in the first episode.
No, I wasn't thinking that, but I was thinking that, you know, like, Generations... I was thinking about, like, should we talk about Generations? Like, yeah, there's not really much to talk about. I mean, it's not that interesting on Picard's side. But I was thinking about, I was thinking back about Kirk's death when he gets crushed on the bridge.
Bridge
on the captain. Yeah, so he, I was thinking, like, you know what? After I saw that in Generations, I was all right. And now, Kirk is one of my childhood heroes. He really is. Like, I grew up wanting to be Captain Kirk. Mm-hmm. And I just, I was like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. Like, that's kind of how a hero of man of action probably is going to die sooner or later. Something crazy is going to happen, and he's going to get caught into either crossfire or, you know, something's going to fall on him or explosion.
I just felt his death saving, his quote-unquote death saving the Enterprise B was way more fitting of a death for him versus just dying under a bridge because Captain Picard couldn't get Whoopi Goldberg to come back with him.
Whoopi, would you come with me? No.
Nope, I'm not leaving the Nexus. This little part of me staying.
Nope.
It's just, I don't know, it was just really weird that there's so many plot holes around his death because of that thing. It's like, why not use the Nexus to come back and punch him on 10 forward? You don't need help.
Oh, again, why not just beam him back?
There are so many ways that they could have gone about that. Like, killing Captain Kirk in that way just seemed, like, anticlimactic to his character.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm scared. I mean, like, if they can kill Picard in a way fitting for him, that would be great. They just don't really do that in Star Trek. They do, like, the bridge on the captain after they did gave him this awesome heroic death saving.
Well, you had Spock.
I mean, Spock's death was heroic, but then they nullified it by bringing him back. Culber's death was the only shocking thing in Discovery Season 1, and they brought him back.
Mm-hmm.
They killed Picard. I mean, they killed Kirk in Into Darkness, and they bring him back immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Con blood.
It does seem like that if they do it right, they bring him back.
Right.
Right? Because, like, because you're right. Now that we mention it, like, what were the permanent deaths in Star Trek? We had Tasha Yar, we had Captain Kirk. But, you know, and all of those, you're like, those are really pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The scenes were really pathetic. And then whenever they do them right, and you're like, oh my God, and you're like crying through the whole scene, which is Culber and Spock, then they bring them back. And you're like,
it nullifies the goodness of the death.
I did it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. There does seem to be they're so afraid of everybody going, oh my God, you know, and crying about this whole thing. They can't let it stay.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
Can't
like, you
hold.
Know, but because Picard has been psychologically tortured so much, what I was actually telling Guy this the other day when I told him this theory just online, because it's from asking him if he was going to do the show with us. And I was like, you know, it would be great if Picard was mortally wounded, instead of Nine has to come and assimilate him to keep him from dying.
Oh, Jesus.
To further scar Picard of being part of the collective once again.
Oh,
because Picard's all about getting all this mental trauma. So why not give it more? Why not give him more? By reborging him. I mean, that would be more fitting for... I mean, after the last couple of episodes, all this crap happening to Picard and all this mental trauma he's going through, if we want to continue the theme of mental trauma, near killing him and using Borg technology to save, quote-unquote, save his life,
mm-hmm.
would be just kind of great. Just more crap for his mental trauma to finally crack him.
Yeah.
That would be great to me. I mean, like, that would be kind of more fun than killing him, because at least that way they're just scarring him more.
Right. No. I totally see that, and... I mean, let's face it. There's just about anything they could do for this this series. So, I mean, we could go on forever speculating.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just something interesting, I thought.
That is extremely interesting.
Instead of killing him, almost kill him, let's just make him more mentally messed up.
But it did cross my mind that they might kill him. I was thinking by like third season or fourth season, whenever they end the episode.
Close the show. I mean, that would be fitting for them to kill him at the very end of the show's run.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a done thing.
Show's over.
Go home, people.
Go home, people. That would just be more fitting, killing him at the end of the show's run, just, you know, signaling an end of an era. Mm-hmm. Just using Patrick Stewart to springboard a new show just to get people to sign up to All Access does feel like something they would do.
I'm not on board with that either. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
It does feel like something they would do.
The whole idea was that.
That's what scares me. That's why I'm scared they're just going to kill him off in the first season. Because if they're just using Patrick Stewart's Picard as a way to get people to sign up for a show people aren't going to want to watch after he's dead, that's not great.
Yeah, because I'm not tuning in for some actors that I don't really care for either way, unless somebody blows me away.
Unless Seven of Nine steps up and becomes like the new captain, I'd stick around if Seven of Nine stepped up and became captain after Picard. I would stick around for that. But if it's any of these other people, I couldn't care about it. So it's scary that, you know, they could just be playing us just to get subscriptions up, and I wouldn't put it past CBS to do that because they are so hard on get CBS All Access out there.
I
sadly, it's working.
Oh, of course it will work. And hopefully they're not that bad.
I hope not, but...
Well, and the truth is, that's where the world is now.
Yeah. Well, the Facebook group, we were talking about Last Jedi, and a lot of people made the... I think, Guy, you might even made this point. I can't remember who said it, but it was basically like... Yeah, these movies are here to make money for Disney, and they're going to be as schlocky as they can make them because they don't need to. They just need to turn out these show. I mean, these movies, you know. So, I don't forgot who was saying that, but I was. It's like, but it's the same idea for CBS All Access, except on a smaller level, obviously.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, they have to make money, but also let's hope they deliver some good content as well.
I hope so. I hope my cynicism is misplaced. But after the bait and switch, after the bait and switch of Discovery season one, switching from a Klingon War story to a Mirror Universe story, which was not really mentioned, and then season two going completely off the rails once they fired the showrunners.
And once everyone loves Anson Mount and Spock, and then like, goodbye. Please give it a show. And like,
see you later.
They're like, what, the fans want a Pike and Spock show? Fuck you, fans. We're not geared for that. So, I mean...
It's
we're just saying.
I hesitate. I don't know what's going on over there. I wish I could be a fly on the wall so I could know what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Well, and hear what they're saying.
And let me say, in defense of CBS All Access, shows take time.
Sure.
So
absolutely.
I mean, nobody had any idea. So you're not going to know that the Star Trek version of. The modern version of Pike and Spock was going to be so popular,
right? Yeah,
you have to have seen that, then gone, oh, this is a good idea. Hey, can someone pitch it? Well, it's going to take 6 months for a pitch.
I have to push back a little bit because I think the whole reason they put them in season two is so people would like Discovery more.
Well, yeah, no, they would. But I don't think that they... my whole thing is that thinking that the show would be better is one thing. Thinking that it's good enough that they should run a spin-off of it, that's a whole different critter. All I'm saying is, you know, you were saying, they're like, screw you, we're not going to do this. Well, they might be. But it's going to take like 3 years.
Okay, but and I'm not disagreeing with you everything you're saying there, Guy. But also, they're like, okay, first of all, I get it. Discovery was resurrecting a dead corpse of the Star Trek, you know, franchise
after being dormant for 15 years.
Yeah, for all that time, and you know, were they going to misstep a little bit? Were there going to be things? Yes, we all knew that was going to be part of the thing. But the other side is, you know, they find something that the fans really like. On Sexy with Pike and Spock, and they're like, man, that would be great if we could see that. These guys are awesome. I love these characters. I love
the casting.
The casting's perfect. And if I was in charge of CBS All Access, you're like, wait, I could get more fans because they sing these guys are fantastic. So let's tell them, maybe in a year and a half, we'll have this geared up and ready to go. But they're not, you know, there's no communication on that. They're just like saying, well, maybe we'll think about it. You know, Kurtzman's like, we're thinking about it, you know, so.
Well, yeah, but they can't say anything until, I mean, nobody can say, especially with Trekkies.
I know.
Nobody can say anything until you have the ink drying.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
If they say, yeah, we're going to do it, and then all of a sudden somebody's like, oh, yeah, Rebecca Romijn can't make it, and so we've got to cancel. Or Anson Mount doesn't want to do a full series,
right?
So we've got to cancel or whatever.
Right.
Then you just told everybody you were going to do it,
yeah.
And you've got to pull back out from that. And then everybody's going to go, well, that was obviously something. There was something going on there. There was a reason.
Yeah.
And they start this whole, there must have been a reason why you did that.
I'm sure there is. I mean, for sure. There's contracts to talk about, and there's all sorts of stories to figure out. So there's a lot there that they have to work out. It's like me and Dave, you know, some of the stuff from Discovery we've really loved, and other stuff we've been a little bit like, you could have done that better, or like, man, I don't even know what that is. So, I mean, we're kind of like hot and cold with it. Sometimes we love it. Other times we're like, no.
What were you thinking?
Yeah. So, I mean, we go back and forth quite often. And it seems like we get this time period as the seasons wear on are over. We start like thinking back and like, man, I don't know about this. They might really fuck this up really bad, you know? So,
yeah.
I'm
not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that, you know, I think people don't understand how the industry works sometimes.
Sure. No, I get that.
And I think they don't give a lot of mm-hmm. room for and I'm also thinking back to you know, the whole fiasco about the 10% change on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
So I actually, like, as part of Geek Tank, we were talking to John Eaves.
Okay.
You know, because he would come into Denver Comic Con.
Yeah.
And being an artist and being a fan of art and things like that, I would interview John Eaves on these things, you know, and I wanted to know about the designs for Discovery and things like that. And
right.
Well, one time I went up to him and I, you know, this is like my third interview with him, right? So, I mean, it's like, you know, he knows me. He knows who I am. He's good.
Right.
And I'm like, hey, John. He's like, hey, Guy. I'm like, so I want to talk to you a little bit about Discovery. He's like, oh, yeah, but I can't talk about that on air.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm like, why? And he's like, because I made a stupid mistake once on Twitter, and now I'm not allowed to say anything on air at all. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, it's like he's been taken out of context. And so, you know, he got taken out of context totally about starships having, you know, because he got permission to change the Enterprise up to 10%. And people misunderstood that as they told him he had to change it 10% so that he could get the rights cleared.
Oh, right.
And
so he was just taking an artistic license on it. Right.
Yeah. He got an artistic license of up to 10% on the ship. So he could change it up to about 10%. But somehow people on the web misunderstood him or whatever. So now they're just saying, don't talk about it at all. Yeah. You can't talk about Discovery.
Well, you know what would be great? If CBS would come out and just just explain that instead of letting everyone conspiracy theorize about some kind of like weird rights issues. There's so many videos about this alternate quote unquote license because of that quote. And if CBS just said there is no alternate license,
they did.
This was an it doesn't seem like they it was did. Circulated.
Nobody believes
well.
Them.
There does seem to be.
I don't remember seeing that anywhere personally, but I mean, like, I don't know. It just seems like it's not circulated.
Yeah, I mean,
well.
They totally went out there and said that, and the response was, "Yeah, you're lying, covering it up." So it's like nobody will believe him anyway. And actually, there's a certain amount of they'll only defend things once, and that's it. They're not going to defend it more than once because nobody's going to believe them.
Well, it's weird, I mean, too, because there's like you always feel like with CBS right now, at least, there's like not – other than when they have something to announce, there's no communication with a lot of stuff. And it's like you always kind of feel like there's like this big secrecy mm-hmm. behind it. And I there's understandable there's some secrecy that they want to keep because – they're trying to develop their stories, and they don't want people getting to know too much information. But sometimes you kind of just like, well, couldn't you tell us a little bit? Or shouldn't there be like some like written material out? And there's a little bit that gets leaked out here and there, but I don't know.
Well, and that's also – I noticed that as part of a convention. Mm-hmm. You know, I just work as part of a local convention here, and I'm a director. And it's the same kind of thing. We're a big convention. And it's astonishing rumors and things like that about what we are thinking at this convention and yada, yada, yada. And how much of it – I was just talking to a friend of mine who's starting her own convention. And I was talking about how our convention sort of has this rap of being snooty. We weren't snooty. We just had no earthly idea we were supposed to be attending meetings with other directors from other conventions.
Huh.
We didn't know that. We just didn't know that was a deal. And so we
didn't get the memo.
We didn't get the memo. So we got this reputation of being snooty and not communicating with other conventions. And I'm like, oh, that's ridiculous.
Snooty?
We just didn't know. I mean, we're volunteering to do conventions. Right. I mean, you know, it's like I do this work as a volunteer.
Yeah, because you
and
love
so,
it. Yeah, right.
Yeah, because I love the convention. I've been working this convention for 23 years. So it's a long time to be on this convention. So she was like, well, there's a meeting. Do you want to come to this meeting? And I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll be there. I'll represent our con. Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome. And she'd be like, it'd be the first time ever. And I'll be like, oh, God.
Wow, that's like, crazy.
Nightmare fuel.
But, I mean, you know, how much of this is, you know, that? And then there's also the, you know, one time one of our directors said something about the convention. And within like 3 days, it was all over Facebook and Twitter that we had done this thing and da 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 da. And the way he had said it kind of made it sound like we hated this other convention.
Hmm.
And we didn't. It had nothing to do with that.
Just came out that way, right.
It just came out that way. And then all of a sudden, we were in this convention war with this other convention. And so I can kind of understand why CBS just has a policy of, don't say anything. Just don't talk. Just don't look at people.
It's just difficult because there's so much fandom and stuff like that. So there's a lot of people that want more information, and we, you know, we've.
I totally get that too.
Yeah,
I mean, I want more information.
We've all like lived off you know buying like the companion books of the episodes and finding out all the behind the scenes stuff, and you know we want more of that information, but we just don't seem to get that too often. So.
And as Trekkies, this is like our modus operandi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we do. We are notorious for being able to tell you details of episodes and be, you know, little teeny, you know, sniglets of this and sniglets of that. And that's like our thing, right? I mean, that's what we do. And so it is hard. I mean, I'm not discounting this at all. This is a particularly nasty fan base to be silent on.
I think most fan bases are nasty one way or the other.
Yeah,
but as far as Trekkies go, we're
it's a different breed.
We've got 50 years of history.
Yeah, there's a mean streak of 50 years
of
long.
Knowing what the name of the cat was in Cat's Paw, I mean, come on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've got history here.
Well, I know. So I guess there's so much to go into with that. But, I mean, let's just hope that Picard doesn't die on the third episode. And yeah. we can
and
see.
And they name the ship after him. It's the like, USS Picard.
We'll always remember Jean-Luc Picard.
No.
The USS Remember Me.
Remember Me. No kill eye. Anyways, yeah. Let's wrap up the show, guys. I enjoyed our talk on this. Anybody else want to say anything else about Picard or Chain of Command or being tortured? Or
I'm totally looking forward to Picard. I'm totally not looking forward to being tortured. Just saying.
Yeah.
I agree with Guy on this one.
Let's hope he's not tortured. Awesome. So, anyways, guys, you can find where our music is provided by Warp 11. They can find them at warp11.com, and they are on Twitter at Warp 11. Our intro music is by Dave Wilkes. You can also visit us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Let us know if you disagree with any of our thoughts or ideas. Also, visit us or subscribe to us over at YouTube / Synthaholics. And like I said before, you can go to the Facebook / groups Synthaholics. Join the group. Talk to us. We have fun memes and a bunch of other silly conversations, sometimes interesting conversations, too.
Yeah, sometimes.
You can also tweet at us. We are at Synthaholics Duo. You tweet at us. I'm at Blackbird2004. Dave's at David_J_Duncan. Holly, who is not here right now, but she will be back someday, at Lunar Thistle. And
Guy's at GS Davis Art.
Yes, guys, yep. GF Dave's art. You can also, if you want to throw a little money our way, we appreciate it. Any little bit helps. You can go to patreon.com/synthaholics. Throw us a buck a month, if more, if you can. And as always, go rate and review us on whatever podcast app you might get us on. That would be great, too, just to help other people see us. And lastly, if any of those things you can't do, please let your neighbor know. Please let your torturer know about Synthaholics, the podcast.
Yeah.
Especially if he's David Warner.
Yes.
There are many episodes.
More than four. I can assure you of that.
And please go to GuyDavis.com. Check out his artwork. Or not, Guy Davis art, right?
G.S. Davis Art.
And check out his webcomics and all that great stuff. So, anything else?
That's it?
No, that covers it.
All right, guys. Well, Dave?
Live long and prosper, one and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in a sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Okay, cool.
Chain of the Command's a chain I've taken whippy with it. Jane Cobb, Firefly.
I don't know why none of us made the Jane quote. This entire episode, and none of us made the Jane quote.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It could be the beginning of the Altes.
Yeah, right. Whip you with it. That's great.
Do we have any news? Do we have any nudes to talk about this evening?
I have no nudes.
No nudes? I thought you were sending Guy some nudes. Did you get those, Guy?
Yeah, I sent you some nudes, Guy.
Yeah, I deleted them.
Yeah.
Damn it.
I totally understand. If I could delete myself from the mirror, I would too.
I was going to send you some unsolicited dick pics. I got pictures of Richard Nixon for that.
I am not a crook.
My dick might be. You know any pussies operated?
Anytime anybody brings that up, I'm like, here's an unsolicited dick pic, and I just post a picture of Richard Nixon.
That's great. I love it.
You didn't ask for it.
Old tricky dick.
You didn't ask for it, but you got it.
You got
all the same.
Tricky dick. Do you want to? Is there anything you want to talk about?
They're rebooting Battlestar Galactica for whatever reason.
They are?
Because it wasn't good enough to reboot with Ron Moore's version or something.
We got to find someone younger and hotter than Tresha Helfer.
Do you want to talk about that?
I don't know anything about it other than that they're doing it. So I thought that was interesting.
I have headphones, and I'm done peeing.
Those are P-phones.
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 E.T. P-phone. E.T. P-phone. My dick glows in the dark.
Did you ever notice that E.T.'s got that wiry dick between his legs?
When I pee, it glows. I think I've got a STD.
Oh, my God.
You know the shower heads that turn light up whenever the water comes through? It's like how the dick is.
That's good. That's good. That's comedy.
I hate to say this, but I kind of want one of those shower heads.
They're really cool.
Actually, for the Kaylee and I's wedding, we got these really cool light up fake candles, and they light up when they touch water. So it's just like the glowing ET penis thing.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Wait,
there's a glowing ET penis thing?
No, that's what we were talking about.
I think he's talking about the finger, but, you know, ET gives everybody the finger.
Fuck you.
Hey, now, as we learned in Star Trek V, everyone keeps their genitals in the same spot.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. When he was showing, he's basically showing his dick to Elliot constantly.
Yes.
So inappropriate.
He's putting it in his face or something.
So inappropriate.
Now the movie's all about E.T.
Now he's all about Brett Kavanaugh, you know.
E.T. The movie's all about E.T. getting his dick wet now.
Oh, Jesus.
Now, yeah, the movie's international or intergalactic dick pics.
Oh, Jesus.
E.T. the pervy extraterrestrial.
We've completely ruined E.T.
This has got to go in the outtakes.
This is outtake.
The E.T. outtakes.
Right, yeah. Okay.
And we have been recording, so...